The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's Halaf. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. My dear listeners, 'tis the month to celebrate father figures. It is also the month that encourages us to show appreciation for pets and animals everywhere. Conveniently, today's stories highlight both. We'll hear how fathers encouraged their children to appreciate animals, even, or maybe especially, pets of the more unique variety, all the while building memories that their children couldn't help but remember all their lives. Our first story is from an author who is no stranger to any kind of pet, up to and including those obtained in the most unusual circumstances. From the book Never Buy a Raccoon at a Gas Station, written by Beth DeJens, copyright 2019, the titular chapter, Never Buy a Raccoon at a Gas Station. It had been almost 2 weeks since my family had left for our summer vacation. After a full day of riding in the Florida and Georgia heat, our family of four, plus our two small dogs, just wanted to be home. Halfway through Georgia, it was getting dark outside, and everyone was tired, hungry, and cranky. Dad was driving and noticed the gas tank drifting toward empty, so he pulled into the nearest gas station. Mom sat in the passenger seat and expertly performed the co-piloting duties. In addition to doling out snacks and drinks at frequent intervals, Mom was a master of precision timing with pit stops. We were well trained to make every stop as brief as possible. Our family's road trip rules were simple. Have your shoes on and your hand on the door handle by the time the car came to a complete stop. Go to the bathroom at every stop, whether you think you have to go or not. Throw away the car trash at every stop. The first person back to the car walks the dogs. These were the simple but effective tools that eased the strain of our frequent road trips to visit family in other states. Within just a few minutes of the car stopping at that gas tank, Mom had gone inside with my sister, Laura, gathered all the trash from our snacks, filled the dog's water bowl, and had taken the dogs on a quick walk. Laura wasn't far behind. She practically ran back to the car, a white 1982 Malibu Classic, still holding her nose from the filthy gas station bathroom. I was always the slowest, so Dad had already finished pumping the gas and was headed inside to pay by the time I got my shoes on and sleepily stumbled toward the gas station bathroom, wondering what unsanitary wonders awaited me there. I was planning my strategy for scoring a Snickers and Pepsi when I noticed Dad was standing by the open window of a pickup truck talking to someone in the driver's seat. I was around 10 years old and always curious, especially if it looked like Dad was up to something interesting. Fun fact, he usually was. He was the only person I knew who loved animals even more than I did. And this conversation had all the signs of an animal adventure. As I got closer to where he was standing, I caught part of the conversation between my dad and a man in the pickup truck. Dad was asking, "What would you take for it?" That's when I noticed a small moving something wrapped in a dirty blue towel on the seat beside him. I walked up to the passenger window to get a closer look. Just as the man moved the towel to show Dad the cutest baby raccoon I'd ever seen, I heard him say, I didn't realize I'd killed a mama coon until old Jake found the babies in the next tree over. I got there as quickly as I could, but this little guy was the only one who survived. They couldn't be but a few weeks old. I squealed with delight when I saw the adorable little face and tiny paws holding tightly to the man's finger. I knew what was coming even before Dad said, "We'd give him a wonderful home. Would you take $25 for him?" I now realize the hunter probably wanted to be rid of an orphaned raccoon, even more than he wanted the $25. But Dad loved to bargain, and the hunter was happy to oblige. As I rushed over to Dad's side of the truck to meet our newest family member, Dad assured the hunter that we would take wonderful care of him, and that he would live in the house with us and eat all the fresh fruits and veggies he could hold. He seemed to appreciate it and said, "I couldn't keep him anyway." So the deal was sealed, money was exchanged for the squirming bundle of cuteness, and we headed back to our car as the truck pulled out from the gas station. But the real adventure had only begun. You see, when we bought that raccoon, we had no idea what a wild ride it would be. We had grossly underestimated how smoothly he would transition into our family. For as long as I can remember, Dad always wore two shirts. He wore a white undershirt and a button-down shirt, short sleeves in summer and long sleeves in winter. His reasoning was simple. You never knew when you'd encounter an animal in need of help, and there's no better way to make that initial introduction than to scoop up the animal in that top shirt so it would feel safe, warm, and protected on the way home to get it settled. I'd seen him wrap up all sorts of lost or injured animals in those shirts, snakes, squirrels, opossums, you name it. When the hunter had handed him over, Dad had wrapped him up in his shirt, like always. About 10 seconds after we got in our car and closed the doors, everyone in our car knew that we had another passenger. The dogs noticed first, with constant sniffing getting closer and closer to Dad's shirt. Puppy T was a small black terrier mix, and Shanda was a Pekingese. Mom had seen the entire transaction and didn't even try to talk us out of it. Her only question was, "What kind of animal is it?" Just in case there was any doubt concerning the pet quality of a raccoon, Dad had all the bases covered. By his logic, several facts justified this decision. First, we were already on our way home. The baby raccoon would make a wonderful pet. Raccoons are known for their cleanliness. After all, how could an animal who insists on washing every meal before eating possibly be unclean? And finally, wouldn't the baby be better off with a loving family than the hunter who had orphaned him? Leaning over the bench seat to get a better look, my sister Laura, who was almost 14, couldn't get over how adorable he was with his bright black button eyes and that precious little black mask around his eyes. As usual, we got a biology lesson, as Dad explained that the black mask helps reduce glare and enhances raccoons' night vision, which was particularly important since they are nocturnal. "That's right," Mom said. "How are we going to get any sleep? He's going to keep us awake all night." Dad quickly redirected the conversation to what we should name our new pet raccoon. It was a short conversation, as Bandit seemed the obvious choice and somehow especially fit his mischievous personality. He hadn't yet stolen anything or played tricks yet, but you could see it in his eyes as plain as day. As much as we wanted to sit there and admire how cute he was, the Georgia heat was closing in around us, and we were all anxious to get back on the road so we could enjoy some much-needed air conditioning. Dad obliged, and we got back on the interstate toward home. Mom and Dad decided that Bandit should stay in the front seat away from the dogs until proper introductions could be made. Laura and I, wrongly, convinced Mom and Dad that we could handle the introductions. We were wrong. At the exact moment that Dad handed the shirt-wrapped raccoon over the seat to Laura and me, Puppy T and Shanda identified the scent and started barking relentlessly at Bandit. That was also the moment that all six of us learned firsthand that raccoons have a natural and incredibly effective defense mechanism when they're scared or angry. It is immediate and profound incontinence. When triggered within the confines of a small sedan with four people and two dogs on the back end of a cross-country family vacation, the result was simply overpowering. Bandit had scrambled up to the top of the back seat, seeking higher ground for his escape from the dogs. The waterfall effect was an absolute disaster. From the floorboard of the back seat, Laura and I fought back overwhelming nausea, while Mom turned into a contortionist trying to reach the dogs to get them into the front seat so they wouldn't become part of the mess. That was the fastest I've ever seen my dad pull over on the side of the road. Thankfully, we all still had on shoes from the recent pit stop, because the moment that Malibu stopped, all of us rolled out of the car like it was full of bees. In hindsight, perhaps that's why raccoon excrement is called scat. Trust me, if you smelled it, you'd scat too. As we all attempted to regain our sense of smell, Dad pitched his solution, which was tying his ruined shirt, which Bandit had just turned into his own personal porta potty, to the rear bumper of the car to air it out. Well, that went about exactly as you might imagine, only worse, especially for the car. Mom wisely recommended that the solids be removed first and the shirt rinsed. We used the last of the water to rinse the shirt, but it was just enough to make it wetter and not enough to thoroughly clean it. Dad was confident that the rest of the mess would take care of itself on the bumper. He was wrong. It was only at the next stop that we realized the full impact of airing out Dad's shirt. The drivers behind us on the interstate had undoubtedly learned the lesson before us and are probably still telling the story to this day. The next stop happened to be when we were pulled over by a state trooper. It started with the infamous blue lights in the rearview mirror. Dad wasn't speeding, so we knew it must be about something else. As the trooper's car rolled to a stop behind our car, Mom and Dad were having a frantic discussion about the legalities of owning a raccoon in Georgia, Virginia, or anywhere else for that matter. Holding back two barking dogs and desperately praying that Bandit didn't have an encore performance up his sleeve, Laura and I anxiously peeked through the rear window and saw the trooper approaching cautiously. Surely we weren't going to have to give Bandit up so soon after we got him. Very slowly, he walked from one side of the car to the other, shaking his head, before walking up to Dad's open window. I'd actually forgotten Dad's shirt was tied to the bumper until the state trooper asked Dad if he knew there was a projectile on the bumper. As he leaned closer to the car window to check the back seat, he visibly recoiled, holding a hand to his nose. Before Dad could even tell him the story, the state trooper announced with finality, "It's fine, just go." And with that, the trooper scattered back to his cruiser to tell the tallest of tales, which would likely never be believed. Bandit's Lesson. So there you have it. Just like that, Bandit the raccoon joined our family. Within just a few minutes, he had made his mark with an unforgettable bathroom event that became legendary in our family. That day, my family learned the first of many lessons from Bandit. The long-term impact of an impulse decision can be life-altering. Bandit was not a subtle or accommodating family member. He often literally turned our lives upside down. Of all the impulse decisions Dad ever made, and there were many, few had a more dramatic impact than buying a raccoon at a gas station. Speaking of encounters of the smelly kind, our next story reveals that sometimes stench is more deliberately thrust upon the unsuspecting. But what if the act of betrayal is done by a trusted father figure? Let's find out what self-proclaimed farm girl Shanna Hatfield did. From her book, Farm Girl, Rural Life Humor from a Farmer's Daughter, copyright 2019, the chapter, The Potency of Skunks. The farm seemed to attract more than its fair share of skunks. Maybe it was the prime location, at the end of a dirt road with nothing but miles and miles of sagebrush on two sides. Maybe it was the many places to burrow in and make nests for their babies amid Dad's collection of antique farm relics. Unless you asked Mom, and they were Thomas's piles of rusted junk no sane man would keep. Regardless of name technicalities, nesting places abounded. Maybe it was the fact endless possibilities for tormenting humans existed. Whatever the reason, from the time the first crocuses bloomed until late summer heat arrived with searing force, you couldn't go more than a day or two without seeing or smelling a skunk on the place. By late June, though, they packed their bags, turned in their vacation notices, and headed for Death Valley or the Sahara Desert, where they could bask in an environment with a more tropical atmosphere than our arid and dry eastern Oregon locale. Without fail, each spring the pungent aroma of skunk would waft to us from a culvert beneath the road that ran by our house. Invariably, some industrious mother skunk, seeking a shady, secluded spot to welcome her litter, would create her own little haven in the depths of the culvert a few hundred yards from our front door. Most of the time, the mother and kits would move on before irrigation water was released into the ditch for the season. One year, however, the little family lingered, unwilling to find a safer, drier spot to set up housekeeping. This was a matter of concern for several reasons. One, my mother couldn't go near her garden spot without invoking the ire of the protective mother skunk. Two, the stench rolling toward our house was enough to choke a mule, as my grandma would say. Three, the two people on the farm who actually thought the little skunk babies were cute worried about the imminent demise of the babies if the mother skunk didn't wise up in a hurry and move her offspring to a safe location. Studying the baby skunks and their habits for several days, admiring their cute little faces, fuzzy tails, and adorable stripes, Dad and I hated the thought of letting them drown when the water reached the ditch. One evening, after the chores were finished, Dad talked me into helping him move the babies. The mother skunk was off hunting or cavorting or taking a coffee break with other mother skunks, so the opportunity seemed ripe to swoop in and rescue the kits. Concluding it would be easier to move the babies without their mother hovering in the background, letting us know how much she didn't appreciate our interference with her choice of housing, Dad quickly selected a new location for the skunks amid his collection of antique farm relics about 50 feet across the road. The ingenious plan was to herd them across the road to the piles of junk, collectibles, where they would have plenty of nesting options. When I questioned the possibility of being sprayed in the process of making the housing reassignment, Dad assured me baby skunks are incapable of spraying, and the excessive skunk aroma I smelled came from the lingering perfume of the mother. "They're too small to spray. You'll be fine." Believing his assurance, I followed along in blind ignorance. We waited until the kits played just outside the culvert, then Dad scooted them out of the ditch. Using our feet to nudge them along, we'd barely gotten started when the overpowering smell of skunk filled the air. It was so unbearable, my eyes began to water, and I could barely breathe. Dad, who always carried a bandana in his back pocket, used it to cover his face, leaving me to figure out my own filtration system. Pulling the edge of my t-shirt collar up over my nose, I glared at my father with undisguised vexation. "I thought you said they couldn't spray." "It's probably just from their mama," Dad said, hastening the herding process by prodding the three kits near him with the toe of his irrigating boot to increase their rate of speed. "Is that why you're wearing rubber boots?" It struck me as odd that Dad had on his irrigating boots earlier, given the fact that there wasn't any water in the ditch and, therefore, no irrigating to be done. The reason for the washable footwear suddenly made a lot more sense. The skunk nearest my foot stopped long enough to let loose a stream of spray, forcing me to take a step back as my nostrils came perilously close to staging a revolt and crawling down to the relative safety of my spleen. "You knew they'd spray us," I accused, trying not to gag from the stench. Up to that point in time, my dad had never done wrong in my eyes. After all, he kept me supplied with candy, took me on adventures too numerous to count, and frequently talked my mother out of delivering whatever corporal punishment I'd earned on any given day. I'd been betrayed, led astray, out and out fibbed to by my dad. "I didn't know any such thing." Dad grinned. At least, I think it was a grin, but it was hard to tell with a bandana still covering his face and a steady stream of water pouring from my eyes. "Now hurry up and shoo those three over here." Since my tennis shoes and jeans already reeked of skunk, I figured it couldn't get much worse at that point. Guiding the kits, who were not nearly as cute and adorable as they'd been 10 minutes earlier, to their new home, I continued glaring at Dad. "You could have at least warned me so I didn't ruin my jeans," I informed him as he repositioned a rusted-out bucket for the baby skunks to play in. Straightening, he looked behind me with wide eyes. "I'm warning you now. You better run." Dad began moving in a hurry up the road toward the house. A glance over my shoulder revealed an irate mother skunk hustling our direction with a speed formerly unknown by other members of her species. If we'd clocked her, she may have even been able to compete at the Indy 500. Running as fast as my skunk-singed lungs could operate, I raced up the front steps. Mom met me at the door with a glare, pointing in the direction of the back of the house. "You're not coming in here smelling like that. You and your father get into more trouble." Mom held a hand over her nose, trying to filter the sharp smell accompanying me. "What did you do? Try to move those baby skunks? Surely your father told you they'd spray." Sometimes the relationship between fathers and animals is even more tenuous, like in our next story, which is one of the thousands of syndicated columns published by Irma Bombeck. From her book, Forever Irma, Best Loved Writing from America's Favorite Humorist, copyright 1996 by the estate of Irma Bombeck. The story, Men Never Ask Directions, originally published August 24, 1969. An obstetrician once made the observation that male babies take longer to deliver. This bears out an old theory I have long held, that even at birth, men are reluctant to ask directions anywhere. I can always tell when my husband is lost. At a crossroad, he will take out a coin and mumble, "Heads right, tails left." Or he will snap on the car radio and yell, "Hold it down until I see where this station is originating from." The way I figure it is, it's a simple attack on male superiority. "Are we lost?" I inquire. "Certainly not," he says. "Why do you ask?" "Because we are in a field of timothy, and a cow is nibbling away on the radio antenna." "Give me the road map." "Are you going to accuse me of moving the Mississippi River again?" "Of course not. Ha! Those fools obviously just let 143 dangle out here in a cornfield. If you can't trust AAA, I always say, who can you trust?" "Here comes a farmer. Why don't you ask directions?" "Because I am not lost. All I do is go back to where that hound dog was asleep in the road, pick up 17, and that will take us right back to the interstate. We've passed that hound dog so often now, he thinks we're family." "Look, don't worry about driving the car. You just keep the baby quiet and dry. See to it that little Charlie doesn't bleed all over the seat covers, and Eloise doesn't get sick again, and the two boys don't fall out of the car fighting over who sits next to the window, and entertain them with some kind of a fun game. In other words, sit back and enjoy yourself." "We've been driving for hours. Why don't we stop and ask directions at a service station?"
"Because I am not lost."
"Why are you so stubborn? What would happen if you stopped and asked directions? Would your beard stop growing? Would your voice suddenly become high-pitched? You don't need a wife and family with you. You need Lowell Thomas and a Boy Scout patrol."
"Will you stop acting like a fishwife and quiet those kids down? One has his wet nose on the back of my neck."
"It isn't a kid. It's a lost cow." We've run out of time for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number one more time is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.